Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Complimentary Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Langerman, joined as always by Anthony Hobday. And today we're going to be talking about where novel ideas come from in the realm of design. But first, anything top of mind for you, Anthony? How's your week been going so far?
Well, I'm sure, well, maybe people noticed at the last episode, I've got a new microphone. Today, I've got a new microphone arm. So it's all looking extremely professional, despite me saying that I would never get a microphone arm the first time we spoke about microphone setups. I can see the benefit. I can see why podcasters and other audio people get so into this sort of thing, do reviews on YouTube, because they're like toys, you know, it's really fun to set it up and move it around. But I'm glad I didn't get the highest possible end of microphone equipment because I have COVID and I might have sent it down the wires to you.
Oh, no.
So if you notice a difference in my voice that's compared to last time when you're editing, it might just be COVID. It might not be the microphone. Ugh,
I'm sorry. That sucks. I didn't even notice at all. You seem perfectly fine.
I think it makes my voice slightly deeper and maybe slightly more gravelly. So I wonder if I'll come across as more authoritative about design this week.
That's the key, is just having COVID.
The key is having COVID out of context. Yeah. Great advice.
Well, I think
how has your week been?
Good. I'm back from vacation, so jumping right back into work. And feeling energized and excited to be here, actually. So I think that's the point. That's why you take time off. So you feel excited about working.
Your 2-week vacation.
Yeah, that's the key. Yeah, you need 2 weeks.
1 week is not enough.
No, because you're still thinking about work after 1 week. But after 2 weeks, you've fully disconnected, hopefully. I mean, maybe you should even go for 3. I don't know. That's a little bit dramatic.
I once asked my dad, he would always eat 2 packets of crisps, which I think in your country you call chips.
Uh-huh.
But in this country, we already have something called chips. So we call them crisps.
French fries.
Yes, but you make them in America, so they're not really French, are they? I once asked my dad, because he'd always sit down and eat 2 packets of crisps in an evening. Hmm. I said, Dad, why do you always eat 2 packets of crisps? And he said, because 1 is not enough and 3 is too many. And I felt like that was not a real answer. But you're reminding me of this with your 1 week of vacation is not enough. Or holiday, as we call them in the UK, or hollybobs, if we're being personal. And 3 weeks of hollybobs is too much. But 2 might be the perfect amount.
Yeah. I love that. That's a really great visual. Yeah.
My dad eating crisps.
Yeah. But just like, it's just a very sweet story. And it's...
But interface design, I can bring it back. 8 pixels is not enough. 16 pixels. No, 32 pixels is too many. Yeah. And 16 pixels is just right.
Just right. Mm, it's like the Goldilocks of pixels.
Mm.
Cool. Also, I want to mention our Twitter poll X poll from the last episode where we were talking about layout. And I had you create a poll for us to see who agreed with me. Most people don't agree with me, Anthony. I don't like this poll anymore. People are supposed to agree with me.
I think maybe it was the examples as well. I think it's really context dependent, especially if you filled it with content, because those are just wireframes with no content at all. I think you probably changed the results a lot, which probably says more about how good polls are as a way of finding out these things.
It was fun, though. My takeaway is it is context dependent, and now I feel like I still like my opinion more, and I still see it like in a lot of different designs on the web right now. But I could see it going the other way depending on the scenario, and some people gave some really good examples where I was like, okay, I can be swayed that centering it, like excluding the sidebar, makes sense. But yeah,
when the poll results go overwhelmingly against you, blame the poll.
Never should have done this. I actually thought it was very fun. So maybe we'll
do more. It was great. And we got a lot more, our combined efforts got a lot more votes on that poll than I think any other poll I've done. So maybe it's something about the visuals.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do it again for another episode. It's pretty fun.
I need the engagement. and I can't farm for it. I need organic.
Cool.
I will only eat organic engagement.
How are you going to segue into the first topic here?
Things in the past used to be more healthy, more natural. Now we have to ask for organic food specifically to get the more healthy, the more natural stuff, you know, pesticides everywhere. And reaching back to the past is one place that novel ideas come from.
Hmm. Okay.
That's the first topic.
Yep.
So yeah, I thought I would dive right into the ways, like where did novel ideas come from? And if we want to discuss some more sort of broad principles, we can try and work them in.
Okay.
But one of the things I've definitely noticed is that some designers will produce something that sounds or looks novel. People think, oh, this is so original. And what I've realized is important is not that those designers know for a fact that that thing is brand new and never been seen before. It's that they've never seen it before. And if you wait long enough, I'm talking decades, you know, potentially sometimes, then basically no designer who'll ever see your design has seen that design before if you just borrow something from the past.
Mm.
And so you've got all these great designers. People talk about them in quite sort of hushed tones, you know, the graphic designers of the 50s, Swiss design pioneers, all this stuff. But we never really go and look at their work unless we buy one of those coffee books and put it on the coffee table and like flip through it, you know, Swiss. Joseph Müller-Brockmann, whatever, you know, flip through his work. But actually, if you do, you can just go in there and basically lift any of the designs wholesale and put it on your website for the first time, as far as your audience is concerned, because they're not looking through the Joseph Müller-Brockmann coffee book for inspiration. Only silly designers like you are. So it's such a great source of things because you know it worked in the past, and people who have seen it even. I doubt they'd even accuse you of plagiarizing. I suspect they would like, oh, thank you for bringing up this warm reminder of my history with me. So it feels like the perfect crime almost. I will say that you should take inspiration and not just steal it wholesale. I don't think people should be passing off other people's work as themselves, as their own. But be inspired by the past. That's seems like one of the simplest ways. I guess the only not simple thing about it is actually going and doing the research, which some people maybe find too much effort.
Yeah, I think it sounds like fun. Yeah, I like that. It's like, I think it's almost more impressive in some scenarios, especially if like somebody takes inspiration from something, like from a book, a graphic design, something they see in a book, and they bring it to the web as part of their site, and some people will have like little about pages about their personal sites and say like where they were inspired from and like link back to things. That's like very interesting, and it shows that they put effort into thinking through the design that they wanted to present. They have some inspiration, they link back to it and sort of reference it. That's almost like more impressive, I guess, because they're not claiming it to be novel necessarily. They're linking back towards something they've seen from the past and bringing it in a new way, or maybe changing something about it to be a little bit more specific to them and unique to them. So it, I don't know. It just almost shows like it's like thoughtful. It's a thoughtful way to design something.
And I think it's quite impressive if someone can point to their inspirations and say, here's the thing that inspired me. And it sounds like you're sort of talking about this sort of in a roundabout way, but I've noticed that a lot of designers, I suspect even if they know their inspiration, they don't really want to share it. I think they think it's part of their secret sauce or something, which is always a bit of a shame, because I don't think anyone who's in the know assumes that these designers are creating these things completely from scratch. You know, it's always inspiration. And so if you're aware of your inspirations and you can share those, that means that you're, like you say, more thoughtful about your work. You're more aware of where those ideas are coming from, which means you've probably considered whether they're appropriate a bit more than someone else might have. But also it shows you're willing to share your work with other people, like sort of behind the scenes. And that's always a good thing for a designer. If you're more open about how you do your work. One of my biggest sort of pet peeves is designers who are not open about how they work, just because they're sort of, why are they keeping something hidden from everyone? It's not, design works by remixing things you've seen.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't work if every design on the planet suddenly like closed down and shut off any access to their thought process, there'd be no new designers, right? That's how we learn. So the more people can be aware of those things and share them, the better, for sure.
I suppose there are scenarios where you see things that inspire you and you don't keep track of them, and they sort of show up in your work, like as a not a consequence, as a byproduct of that, and then you don't have anything to reference.
Yeah.
And
I've heard about that with some songwriters. They'll like put in
a chord progression in music. Yeah.
They'll put in a chord progression that's from like a really famous popular song, and they basically won't realize they've done it, and then people will criticize them for it, and they'll be like, actually, yeah, I was listening to a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers at the time. And so it's just found its way into one of their most popular songs. And they, I believe they honestly don't know, you know, that they just sort of, once they point it out, it's like, oh, of course. But you sort of stumble across something while you're, you know, designing or whatever, or in that case, writing a song, and you realize it sounds good, and you're not really sure why it sounds good, but you go with the feeling, you know?
Right. On your end, you like save screenshots of things, right? You have like a system where you save things that inspire you. Do you ever go back and reference those things? Like if you notice that something has showed up in your own design?
This is one of my sort of dirty secrets, is that I never look at my collection of inspiration screenshots when I'm designing things.
Ooh, tell us more.
I also basically never look at, I probably shouldn't admit this in public as it were. I almost never look at competitors or ways other people have done things when I'm designing something sort of professionally. I basically rely on my, it doesn't feel like my intuition. It feels like I'm relying on this sort of concept of first principles. I don't know how respected that idea is in interface design, but it seems like I'm always approaching it in terms of how should this be designed? And then afterwards I might check how other people have designed it. I think it's partly a pride thing in the sense that I want to have been the person who decided what the best way to approach it was for my work. I'm not saying everyone should follow my lead, but if I'm designing something, I want to be the person who like, this is how we should do it, and then check it. And also I think it's partly that I sort of forget, like I get wrapped up in the design process. But I have realized that maybe it's because I do look at so much design when I'm not designing, like when I'm in my collection mode, my browsing mode, maybe I look at so much and notice so many patterns that actually I've got that stuff ready to go in my head much more easily, perhaps.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the optimistic, prideful explanation, is that I don't need to look at the inspiration because I look at it so much the rest of the time that it's sort of bubbling around up there. Whereas someone who doesn't do all of that sort of cataloging and research in their spare time, maybe they would need to reference that sort of directly more often. And go and look at their screenshot folder or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you have a catalog of any kind?
Not quite the same as yours. I use MyMind. I don't know if you've heard of that app, but it's kind of like you can just save anything to it, and it's meant to help you organize it, because I don't love to spend a ton of time organizing systems, I guess, for myself. I'm kind of lazy. I've been there. I've done that. But I usually lose track of it. So I wanted a tool that would just do it for me. But I do save inspiration there that catches my eye. And I sort of like, I took your advice in one of our previous episodes where you say you spend like a certain amount of time looking through specific websites. So I added those websites to my RSS reader. And then if something catches my eye in that, I will save it to my mind and maybe tag it with like what I had in mind for it. Like if I'm redoing my personal site, which I desperately need to do, I might tag things like personal site so I know to look at it, because I think I'm kind of different from you in that I tend to look at inspiration first before I design. I don't know if that means I'm a bad designer, but I sort of am of that generation, I guess. I'm not going to say I'm the dribble generation, but because I don't really like looking at dribble for that reason, because it's usually kind of not real, like not realistic things that I could actually use. But in terms of design systems work, I find it makes sense to go kind of peruse what other design systems are doing, because a lot of the things we're working on are low level patterns that should be more consistent with just like web standards. So it's a little bit easier to kind of justify that. But I get overwhelmed when I look at personal sites, because they're so unique, and it's like, well, I can't really replicate your uniqueness in your personal site because it needs to be unique for me. So I might be less likely to kind of look for inspiration in that scenario. But
yeah, that makes sense. It's and to your point earlier, I think I would produce better designs if I did go and look at inspiration properly before I started, like made a mood board sort of thing. Because I think otherwise I fall back on my preferences in design, which tend to be quite simple, quite orderly. Like, I think it's good to be aware of your preferences in that way as an interface designer, because then you can recognize, oh, I'm designing this with all boxes around things and everything's aligned perfectly, because that's how I think design should be at a sort of base level. And so if you go and look at that inspiration, it can help you to sort of get you out of that rut, jog you out of that standard approach, which is going to make your designs a bit more novel, at least compared to how you normally design. So it's like internally novel rather than externally novel, potentially.
Yeah.
I think there was something there that leads us nicely into our next source of novel designs, but that's a really bad segue for me to say, I think we said something there that leads me.
It's fine. It works just the same.
I'm not actually pointing out the thing that leads, but there was something that means, oh, that leads me to the next one. And I will say, by the way, there's more sources of novel ideas than these three we're going to talk about. But these three sort of jumped out at me as quite useful, practical ones. So the next one is making interesting combinations. And this ties in quite nicely to getting stuff from the past or looking at inspiration, because you don't want to necessarily copy that 50s graphic design icon wholesale, or you don't necessarily want to go and copy, you know, a website that was published yesterday wholesale. But if you say, how could I combine the website that was published yesterday with this 50s graphic icon and their design style, you're basically making an interesting combination. So you're saying, what does it look like if I multiply these together? And I remember seeing a great tool once that was put together by, it was a design studio, and now I can't remember the name of it. So no shout out, unfortunately. But they put together this internal tool, which basically gave you a prompt that was X times Y, where X was one thing that everyone's familiar with, like Facebook, and Y was sort of a style. And so it could be like, how would Facebook look in the style of a newspaper? And so they're basically taking this established idea that everyone's familiar with, and the designer especially, and saying, but now modify it in this way. So make it look more like a blank. And so I really like that, because you're basically taking two definitely not novel ideas, and you're combining them into probably a novel idea, because there's infinite numbers of combinations you can make between different visual styles. And especially if you want to do it well, you've got to think quite hard about, how do I make Facebook look like a newspaper, but keep it Facebook, you know?
Yeah.
Or make it feel coherent in the end, because I could just slap a grayscale color palette over it and a bit of sepia tone. But is that fully like leaning into this idea of a newspaper Facebook, or is it, am I doing it's sort of the cheap version? Yeah.
Yeah, like a theme.
And so I think just having those two things in your mind, sort of trying to combine them, will throw out a lot of interesting and probably novel ideas in terms of, okay, maybe if I'm doing a comment text field, I'll put a dotted line around it because that's similar to those fill out this little form and cut it out and send it off things used to get in newspapers for coupons or money back or whatever. Maybe start to think about the way that newspapers had to represent things and bring those into your design. So I think that's an easy way, not an easy way necessarily, but that's a simple way to get novel ideas, is to combine two things that are not novel.
Right. You're just making me think of like UI design when I first got into it, like making MySpace layouts. And I would always try to bring, I mean, they were ridiculous, but I would try to bring in like real life objects. So the whole thing was basically just an image, and I would put like an image of a sticky note with a piece of tape on it, and it would look like a real sticky note kind of thing with like tactile objects to like, I don't even remember what was supposed to be on your MySpace layout, but I would put quotes or something on it. And that was fun. I think it's not as common now to try to bring these like tactile things into web design, but it was back when we used images for literally everything. So
you must have been frustrated when you were trying to componentize the sticky note and bring in variables so that you could set the color but only have one component for a sticky note.
So long ago, I don't think that was a concept in my brain at all.
You were trying to explain to your, you know, I don't know how old you are, but your 13-year-old friends, like, oh, if I change this variable, it changes the angle at which the sticky tape appears to have been stuck to the... And they're like, what are you talking about? It's like design systems. And those hadn't been invented yet. And you were already
ahead of the game.
Yeah. Turns out you invented design systems.
Oh, God, no. I will not claim that
world title. Famous.
One thing that I think of, like, that kind of came to mind when you were talking about interesting combinations of things is like, and I guess this isn't really novel anymore. I mean, I guess at some point it stops being novel, but people building really modern, clean, like, I guess think about landing pages or product landing pages with a serif font that feels like, that feels kind of like an interesting combination where you're taking traditionally kind of like an older style typeface for your headings or something and combining it with a super clean, like black and white, high contrast, modern design. That feels like it could be a novel thing, or maybe it was at one point and now it's a little bit more common.
Well, it's sort of like a micro novel combination, isn't it? Because you're doing one thing and in that case, it's quite like an oxymoron in the sense that you're taking something where people expect the sans serif font and then you're putting the serif font in. It can be quite powerful just because, you know, you're going against expectations. And so it feels really fresh. And often when people try to be novel, I think the temptation for them is to go novel on everything.
Yeah.
But then you get sort of less impact. There's more likely to be quite a messy design. But if you're doing what you're saying, where you're taking all of the standard stuff and changing one thing, it's like a bright white room where everything's white, floors, ceilings, walls, and then you put like a pink teddy bear in the middle. It's going to grab your attention so much, have so much impact, and it's just completely what you don't expect. So I really like that, especially because if you're just starting out, it's a much easier way to try to create something original than do everything. You know, that's a tall order. Along the same lines, it's sort of the opposite of what you described, I guess, is... And I was thinking about this with the Bring Back the Past, is if you take something that's an old pattern, like even if it's an old layout for websites, or maybe you've got a favorite mobile app from the 1990s, but that's a bit early for mobile apps. If you've got a favorite mobile app from 2008 onwards, when the App Store was released, a lot of those don't look modern because of the visual style, but actually the patterns are relatively timeless probably. But maybe they haven't been used just because people have this strong association with that visual style, so they sort of avoid it. But if you grab like one of those really classic mobile apps like Path or Facebook Paper, whatever, I can't remember the names of those like Hall of Famer apps are. But if you grab those and basically say, okay, I want to take this and do an interesting combination by making it a modern visual style, like I think that would be quite a lot of work. But basically you're saying, how does this quite old layout and approach to interaction work if I make it look modern? And that's an interesting combination that involves bringing back the past. So I think that would work quite well, just because people, I think, move on from those sorts of layout patterns and stuff, and they don't reconsider them, unfortunately.
Right.
I was going to ask about design systems, because I assume that there is not a lot of call for originality when people, the reason I find that interesting or strange is because design systems are where the originality sort of sits in an organization. Like the design system team creates all the components from scratch, is the sort of ideal. And then other people take them and they're not allowed to do anything new or interesting. They have to just fill in the templates.
Yeah.
But there's someone doing the templates and they're the ones making the decisions. So there must be some aspect of originality somewhere in that process.
I think it just depends. Sometimes we're building such low level primitives that they are meant to be as basic as possible, and they will look fairly similar across design system to design system, like, you know, form components, those kinds of things, buttons. Well, buttons can be unique to some degree. Like, it's mostly just a style change. I think where it gets where there is opportunity for novelty is in layout, actually, which we discussed last week. If you were, if your design system handles like the entire layout for your product, well, that's a huge responsibility. And that can really impact the look and feel of your site. So that's one that, like, I would say you'd be collaborating with product on these kinds of things and not just like crawling in a hole and design and deciding how layout is going to work for your design system. Yeah. It has to like really fit into the product. And there are design systems that are used for brand type of things. Like if you think about the big fancy landing pages that we see for some of the bigger companies, I mean, those are typically like bespoke one-off designs, but some of them are using like lower level components. So there has to be some flexibility built in to that. And that's something we're definitely exploring at GitHub on the design system side for brand is like, what about these kind of interesting new patterns and ideas? How can we systemize it in a way that the designers can still use them and they're flexible and interesting? And like, it's definitely a bit beyond the typical work that you would see on a design systems team. So lots of design work there.
Yeah, I suppose it makes sense for a lot of design systems. Novel ideas are sort of not really what's expected or wanted. Because a lot of interfaces, you know, you don't want novelty. It's quite rare. I often notice that the only place you really see sort of expressive design elements in a SaaS application interface is in the upsell sections. Like if you're deciding to sign up properly or upgrade or whatever, they suddenly start to bring in the colors and the illustrations. And until that, it's just like a sea of gray. Like, yeah. Where did all this come from? It was hiding in the place where it needed to convince me.
Yep. And sometimes there are systems. A bit cynical. Yeah, sometimes there are systems driving those things. It just depends on how similar do you want them all to feel, or do they need to feel really unique in every setting? So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
The last one I thought I'd bring up, which we've already touched on a little bit, is to look outside design. And another one of my pet peeves is people who say, oh, my biggest inspiration is when I go for a walk. And they're like, they never really explain what they mean. I always assume they do not mean direct inspiration. Like I saw a blade of grass and that inspired this SaaS interface I designed yesterday.
Yeah.
I think really what they're saying is they're walking around and they're letting their brain whir and they're sort of relaxing and that helps them to come up with solutions for ideas or whatever. And so it's not really inspiration in the sense that they're getting the ideas from somewhere. It's inspiration in the sense that they're allowing their brain to do the work. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean that when I say look outside design. I mean look at things that are adjacent to interface design, like graphic design, like architecture. Even if you read a book about architecture and explore some of the ideas about sort of the main thought processes behind architectural sort of movements and the way that a lot of famous architects thought about things, you start to learn about things like material honesty and ornamentation and embellishment and everything. And you start to get a sense of, okay, so here's like brutalism, for example, is a very striking form of architecture. It's very orderly, very straight lines, boxy, very little embellishment. And so if you explore those, you'll start to get some ideas for, oh, okay, how can I bring across these principles into interface design? And it's probably more along the lines of websites because you'll be looking at whether to be expressive or not. And that's not really a much of a topic in sort of application interface design. But yeah, just looking outside of our own field and exploring how other visual mediums sort of think about that could be quite interesting. I guess a extremely simple example is if you started to use like chalk style outlines for your containers on a website, like that could be inspired by you looking at, you know, children's drawings or pen and ink artists or something. And like I say, it's a very simple example, but you might not have thought of that if you were just looking at other websites, because it's quite a rare visual style to see chalk outlines for anything.
Yeah, I think it's like very easy, depending on your level of connectivity to the design community, to be a little narrow-minded and only like, I'm going to talk about social media as a way of gaining inspiration, I guess. But if you're only following other designers and that's your source of inspiration, and you don't look outside of that. Like, it might be worth kind of exploring, like, some things that I follow a lot of photographers, because I find looking at photography is like it's like a rest from looking at web design type things, and it forces you to think about composition and color and like the real world, I guess, depending on what kind of photography it is, in a different way. And it's just like a nice kind of low effort way to immerse yourself in a different medium.
Mm.
And also, I think probably because I have a graphic design background, I'm always interested in following graphic designers and seeing, especially like physical art or like prints or things with like textiles and fabrics are kind of interesting to me. And you can tie a lot of that back to the web in some way if you want to. I guess that kind of makes sense based on the design I was doing back in the 90s. Just kidding. Back in the early 2000s. But so I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, you can go as deep into it as you want, but it could be as simple as just exploring different social media accounts to follow, just to like get some of that kind of external inspiration into your feed, so you're seeing it more regularly.
Yeah. I've seen posters at train stations, for example, that made me want to go and explore that sort of layout approach. And it makes sense because they're trying to do roughly the same thing. They're trying to grab your attention. They're trying to get a message across, but they're trying to be visually interesting at the same time. They're not just going to print it in sort of plain black and white letters against a plain background with no sort of layout treatment, unless they're doing that because no one else is doing it, in which case they're doing it to stand out. So, I see that sort of thing, and I usually take a photo of the ones I really like, and I put them in my inspiration folder as well, because I might sort of be scrolling through that one day and think, oh yeah, I will try this. Because it works for things like a hero section on a website, you know. You need something big and bold. It doesn't always work, and you won't be able to use it for your text editor you're designing. But for some things, it's good to have those at the ready.
Yeah. I love seeing typographers use like real life inspiration for new typefaces. I feel like that's pretty common to see, like type on a really old building somewhere, and then you want to create a new typeface based on that like old set. Then there's a story behind it, and it's like kind of interesting and cool. So
I suspect you're saying that because of Dan,
yes,
whatever his last name is, Cederholm.
Cederholm.
Because I know that all of his typefaces are based on stuff he saw in the real world.
And he just posted a video like yesterday that I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I just love seeing the story behind it. And then it gives you a cool name for it. Like, it gives you so much to work with. It's a lot to draw from.
I find it so strange that people will see, there's this series of events where someone has designed basically a unique typeface for this signage or whatever. And then someone else has come along and seen it and been like, I can make this a digital typeface. And they're having to copy it sort of letter by letter and fill in some blanks if there's not letters given to them. And it's just strange to me now as a digital designer that there wasn't already a digital typeface for that signage they were designing in 1980 or whatever. They maybe had to just letter it by hand, and then someone else had to come along and say, I'm going to preserve this forever digitally. Because now the only typefaces I can use are digital. Like, everything I ever use a typeface for will be a digital product. And so the thought there isn't an existing typeface for it is absolutely mad.
Right. Or handwriting. So, some people make typefaces out of handwriting, which is like, I assume, extremely difficult. But it seems like a fun, like, it's a cool project, basically. It's like, this, here's my handwriting that nobody else has, and I'm going to make a digital version of it. I think that's really fascinating.
And that's a great thing for your personal site. If you set it all in your own...
No one can read it.
Handwriting. Yeah, as long as you have nice handwriting, I suppose.
Yeah.
But if you set it all in that would be completely original, because like you say, it's basically a fingerprint. You know, someone else couldn't use that typeface to make their own personal site. Hopefully lots of ideas there.
Yeah.
Let's be original! Exclamation mark.
Look outside design. Yeah, I guess my final thought on this, because we talked a lot about like being intentional with your designs, and I don't know that you have to sit down and say, okay, I need to make a design that is novel. Like, it needs to be unique and stand out in this big way. I think some of the best ones probably just happen naturally as you're progressing through, maybe starting with your principles and your basic design, and then an idea comes to you and you want to explore it. Like, you were just exploring different drop shadow ideas I saw on Twitter. Like, these kinds of things just kind of naturally happen sometimes as you're designing. So you don't need to put a ton of pressure on yourself to create something unique and new, I guess. Sometimes these things just kind of happen, especially if you're grabbing inspiration kind of throughout your day as a regular occurrence.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if it's not completely novel, it can still be good design, you know?
Yeah.
I realize that this episode being about novel design might suggest that we believe that novel design is the best kind.
But, I think the two of us don't necessarily believe that.
We work almost exclusively in un-novel design.
Yeah. It's just it's there as an option to explore, like most things in design. Cool. Well, I think that wraps it up for us this week. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Goodbye.